All right. Thanks, everybody, for being on the call. Welcome to the PMFA Best Practice Operations Call. So I am Joel Smith, and I've been a franchisee for almost 15 years, going on 15 years. And so I have 8 stores in the Des Moines area, and I'm also a John Maxwell Certified Coach and Leadership Trainer. We have a few purposes for this call, and the first is to have a place where restaurant leaders can connect and learn and share best practices. And number 2, to help owners work on our business and not just in it. And number 3, to share systems and strategies that drive profitability. Today, we are going to talk about the maturity continuum. And that comes from the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. So we're going to just do a quick overview of one of the chapters. It's not going to be anything really in depth, but it's pretty important. And with me today is my co-host is Mickey Waters. And I know, Mickey, you're excited about this topic.
I am really excited because I was actually reading the seven habits this morning, and it had been sticking in my head because I had some challenges with a few of my senior management team. And so I was actually looking for a little bit of guidance, maybe a little bit of a refresher. So this is perfect timing.
Yeah, I've read this book several times, and I know, Mickey, you've mentioned that you've read it a couple times as well. And every time I read it, I get something different out of it. And so this time, I've been reading it over the last month, and this just kind of stuck out as something we need to talk about. And so we're going to talk about the maturity continuum. And what that is basically it's a journey through life and through our leadership journey. It goes from dependence, where everybody starts at a place where we're dependent, and then we move into a place of independence, where we kind of learn to stand on our own and become a little bit less dependent on other people. And then that third section is the place we want to get to is interdependence. And that's the sweet spot of leadership, isn't it? I mean, this is where we want our people to get to. This is where we want to get to. And so we're going to discuss kind of what each stage looks like and maybe talk about some of the roadblocks that people have to get from one stage to the next and how we can kind of help people to move through this and progress to the next stages. So, I don't know. Mickey, are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Strap ourselves in.
I want to make sure that I'm interdependent.
I think so too. I think it's really important. If you weren't, I wouldn't have you be on this call.
Okay.
I think you're very interdependent. So I'm going to give you an overview here real quick of dependence, independence, and interdependence, the way that Stephen Covey would describe. And then after that, Mickey and I are going to dive into a little bit more of what that looks like. And we do want to open up for dialogue as well. So feel free, anybody that wants to chime in and give their thoughts and opinions. It's not a closed discussion with Mickey and I. We definitely want to invite that. So feel free to go ahead and chime in anytime you want to. So an overview real quick here. So dependence is the paradigm of you. You take care of me. You come through for me. You didn't come through. I blame you for the results. That's kind of the dependence. Dependent people are generally lacking in confidence. Dependent people need others to get what they want. Dependent people need others to solve their problems for them. And dependent people can learn to become independent, but they need to have it demonstrated step by step. So that's kind of an example of dependence, what that means. It means somebody that just is at that place where they just can't lead the way. They need to be a follower, and they need to have someone else dictate kind of what happens in their life. The independent state is a little bit different. So the independent is the paradigm of I can do it. I'm responsible. I am self-reliant. I can choose. Independent people can get what they want through their own effort. You may think of like a child going through the independent stage, a 3 or 4 year old saying, I can do it. I can do it. And so we actually cycle through this a lot through life. So it's not just early stages, but it's you can find independent people at all ages. So independent people gain confidence when they become independent because they can solve their own problems. They're not dependent on people as much. Independent people don't need others to meet their basic needs. Independent people can tend to be good problem solvers. And independent people over time can use their independence to break away from accountability. That's not necessarily a good thing. So interdependence is, that's like where we want to get to. And that's where we want our children to get to. And that's where we want our managers to get to and our employees eventually. And some will get there and some won't get there. But this is the paradigm of we can do it. We can cooperate. We can combine our talents and our abilities and create something greater together. So if you think of those three steps, this dependence, independence, and interdependence, if you draw a line down the piece of the middle of a piece of paper, on one side you put the word dependence and put some of the qualities of dependence, and then on the other side you put the qualities of independence, and you put those qualities. Interdependence kind of takes both of them and combines them together. It's having enough sense to know that we do need other people if we truly want to succeed and grow and to reach our maximum abilities. But it's also, we're independent enough to know that we are contributing to other people's success. We're not contributing to their discomfort because they're relying on or because they're trying to solve our problems. We're solving our own problems, and we're also helping other people solve their problems as well. And when you have that interdependence, that's where we need to go. And you can probably all relate to this by maybe thinking back to a particular night or day or week of really high business, when everything clicked and worked really well and everybody's working well together. That's interdependence. When you see people that are finishing things that the other person is starting, and they're clicking together and no one is working independently, that's what we want to get to. On the contrast, so you've probably seen times where you've had a rush where everybody's working independently and no one's working together too. So independence can be a bad thing as well. So, well, let's start right now with dependent people. Mickey, why don't we talk about dependent people and kind of give an idea of, in our world, our Papa Murphy's world, what those people might look like. How would you describe, or what would you say would be a dependent person in our business?
Well, we've had situations where the dependent person, and I'm primarily speaking about management, because that's the level of folks that I'm working with, and those people are the ones that are constantly either texting me or texting their area supervisor and saying something like, I just got a quick question, instead of, maybe saving all the questions for 3 o'clock in the afternoon and saying, can I go over a few things with you? Here's some of the things that I'm faced with, and here's my thoughts on them. What do you think of my outcomes? Or what do you think of, how I want to handle this? They're always looking for the area supervisor to feed them the answer.
Right.
Is basically what I see rarely.
Yep, and we can have dependent people on all areas, of the spectrum with this, too.
Could be even the area supervisor. I've seen that in past positions where the area supervisor is always looking for affirmation or looking for the answer when something comes up from the owner.
Yep. So I want to break this down a little bit further into a few different categories of dependency. So the first one is physical dependency. So maybe you have a person that can't quite knock out prep and get stuff done as quickly or as effectively as somebody else because of physical limitations, maybe whatever the case is. It could be that dependency where you rely on putting other people around you that can get it done. There's also emotional dependency, and that would be somebody that really needs their supervisor or their owner or whoever to praise them or give them feedback because their opinion they think that your opinion of them really matters so much. They're people pleasers. They want to make sure that they're not making a mistake. Those people can also tend to be very defensive if they're called out on something, not take constructive criticism very well.
And they're always apologizing.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Yep. And so they need approval. That's one of the bigger things. Then there's intellectual dependency. Intellectual dependency would basically be a thinking. You know, they're not really capable of thinking through problems. They'll be the ones that will be texting you and asking you, what would you do, and or what should I do, and so that's tough too. They're just maybe some people are just more gifted at thinking through problems than others, but the people that don't necessarily solve problems well can learn to become better. So they don't have to be quite as dependent. Dependency really is an issue of responsibility. People aren't capable of taking responsibility for certain things, and so they don't. Or it could be that they're afraid to take on responsibility too. So they would rather have the responsibility fall on someone else's shoulders and then rely on that other person that takes the responsibility off of them. So I think one of the keys to moving a person from the dependent stage to the independent stage would be to really focus on responsibility.
And, you know, you say focus on the responsibility. What if you're the type of leader that keeps them dependent?
That's a good point. So what you're suggesting is that we as leaders, we might keep people in a dependent state by not, what, trusting them, by not empowering them, by not giving them the opportunities.
I can see in some of the people that I worked with, I can see that. They had the need to, the moment they thought something was going on, they had to be in the middle of it, or they had to check in every couple of hours, or any time something came up, they'd give the answer instead of saying something like, what do you think you'd like to do in this situation? Or what does this situation tell you that the outcome should be? And how do we get there?
Right. So the way we lead people that are in that dependent stage has a great deal of whether they stay in that stage or if they're able to grow beyond that and become independent and be able to stand on their own.
Some people want to stay dependent? The other thing.
I think absolutely. I think some people are scared to death to move into the independent stage. And, for whatever reason, whether it's for safety reasons or it's driven by fear, I think, a lot. But sometimes it's just that maybe they haven't been under the right leader, or maybe not the right parents necessarily that would challenge them to become independent and help nurture them through that stage. But I think with the dependent stage, one thing that is interesting about that is when you're in the dependent stage, you're not in this for a win-win relationship. You're in this for a win-lose relationship. In other words, you're fine if somebody else takes the responsibility on their shoulders for your success. And so you're okay if someone else loses for you to win. And that can be a burden on other people. So if everybody's dependent, you know, nobody's leading and nobody's really going to go anywhere. So that's one key thing, just to realize that people that are in the dependent stage can be, it can be a win-lose situation that's not always good. Now, I think when we were preparing for this, Mickey, I think you mentioned something too, that sometimes we need dependent people. You know, sometimes we need people that are just going to come follow directions and do the right things and all of that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Until there's a crisis, and that crisis may be the manager decided to get another job, and you need somebody ready to move up, or the manager became ill, or they didn't prepare for whatever the situation is, an event day, or I'm still just talking about our Papa Murphy's world, but sometimes you know, they got to be ready to step up. You hope they're ready to step up.
Yep. All right, so let's take a peek at independent people. So independent people are people that have gotten to that place, and we were talking a little bit beforehand, Mickey, and I was mentioning that in our training within my company, we've talked about two different hills to get over or humps to get over in our leadership world. And one of those, the first hump that we have to get over is the hump of responsibility, of coming to a place where you're 100% responsible for you and your results. And that's a tough place because there's a lot of grown-up people that are not, that have never gotten to that place. And I have to admit for myself, a lot of my friends growing up in high school got to that place much sooner than me. It took me some crisis in my life before I got to that point. Mm-hmm. And so everybody has different timing, but that first hump, I think, is really getting to that point where you're out of excuses and you have to take responsibility and you jump on it. And that can happen at different times, but so that's really important. That's the best first step. But that's not the end of the story. That's not where we haven't just arrived. We're just getting started with that stage.
Yeah, because sometimes you get that because people have abandoned you.
Right, out of necessity. Yeah. The people you depended on aren't there anymore, and so now you've got to become dependent on yourself.
Yes.
And that could be a very, very valuable lesson. There are a lot of people that grow up maybe in not necessarily the best situation, but they have to learn to become independent early on. You know, you think of maybe some broken families where the oldest child ended up taking on a lot of responsibilities for raising some of their siblings or whatever. They had to grow up faster than other people.
Nice.
And then other people in situations where they don't really have to grow up very quickly. They can live in mom's basement forever if they want, you know? And so that makes it more difficult for somebody to really reach that independent
state. And that parallel applies to work too. If you have a store manager that's, you know, maybe in their early 30s and you've got assistant managers under them, you know, it's going to be a long time before that store manager moves on. So some of your folks may have them for and be dependent on them for a long, long time. And the best thing, you know, ultimately what you'd like is that store manager to make them more, help them become more independent so maybe they can take on some additional roles doing LSM or additional volunteering in the community or, you know, or maybe take a few things off of the owner's plate that is keeping the owner from doing some of those other things.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime we can share the load on anything, that's important, but we have to become independent first. We have at some point we got to leave the cradle and not be a dependent person. And this independent stage is that next stage. So what this looks like, you know, you could have physically independent, so you could actually be able to do pretty well on your own without anybody else. Emotional independence would be you can feel good about yourself and you don't need a bunch of pats on the back necessarily because where you go from there depends on you and it doesn't depend on other people. Intellectual independence might be you have the freedom to learn as much as you want. So you can, you know, dig into the operations manual. You can ask a lot of questions. You can join leadership calls and read books and find out all the things that you need to find on an intellectual level, and you don't need anybody else necessarily to help you do that to become independent. You can always improve yourself. You can always solve your problems and make your situation better.
Yeah.
But that's not the end of the story with the independence. There's a downside to that.
What is the downside if I've got somebody who's independent around me? Or if I'm too independent?
Yep. So what do you see as some of the downsides to the independent stage there, Mickey?
Well, I think that what I've seen is that if I'm being left alone to be independent, sometimes I can just go in a direction that I want to go. And if I want to, I'll bring it home, if you will. And if I decide I want to make my own POP, and I'm going to put up POP in my store that maybe doesn't meet brand standards, but I've got a really great idea, so, you know, I'm going to do it. Or if I, you know, maybe there's a training shortcut that I think is good, but it doesn't meet brand standards. Or maybe I've taken the orientation process and I've streamlined that, or maybe I've actually even made it better. Sometimes the independents could bring it, make it better, but I don't share it with anybody else in the other stores within my group.
Right, right. So with independents, sometimes people that are independent, they can be kind of averse to systems. That's kind of what I'm getting from you there. You might kind of shy away from the systems and kind of do it your own way. But those systems are there to help us, to help guide us all in a common direction. And that's where we want to get to. We want to get to that interdependence where we're all naturally doing things alongside of each other. But you're right. There's a lot of danger in that independent stage if we stay in that stage for too long.
Mm-hmm.
You can start to learn some entitlement in that stage. You can believe that your value is much greater than what it might really be. Somebody that's independent can really look at themselves like a rock star because they're not dependent on anybody else, and that's what they think we want. But they don't realize that there's another step that we really need beyond that. And so I've seen that before where somebody, a manager stuck in the independent stage, really overvalues what they're doing. They believe that they don't realize the headaches that they're causing by scribbling outside the box and doing things on their own and, you know, having to have us reel them back in again. So
yeah.
It's a tough stage. True independence empowers us to act rather than to be acted upon. It frees us from the dependence on circumstances and the other people. And that is true. So independence keeps you from being dependent. So you're acting instead of being acted upon. So you now are the person kind of making the rules and you're making the standards. And independent people can be very much in control of their crew. You know, if they're a manager, they can be in control of their crew and have good control over them, but it's not always healthy control. So that kind of leads us to the third stage, the interdependent stage that we want to, we really want to strive for all of us to get to. And interdependence is a little bit different, and that is the sweet spot. But interdependence lets go, you know, it's when you can let go of yourself and incorporate a we perspective. Like, we can do this together. It's stepping out of the spotlight and broadening the spotlight on everybody else. How would you describe that, Mickey?
You know, for us, for me, it's teaching people those things that maybe it's some of the things that I've been doing. If it's me that's been going to the chamber meetings, or if it's me that's been doing the orientations that I give some ownership to area supervisors, and maybe the area supervisors who may have been doing some of the first and primary, second and third day trainings, move that training and schedule another person to do that. Another example would be we've incorporated safety committees being done by our shift supervisors. We've elevated our shift supervisors now so that they've taken that off of the assistant manager's plate, and the assistant manager has taken two things off of the store manager's plate. Store manager has taken two things off of the area supervisor plate would be something that I would, you know, it's one thing I would think of.
Yeah. No doubt. So interdependence it's a win-win. You know, we want to win. We want to be successful ourselves, but we want to help other people become successful as well. And so if I help you and you help me, and we can help each other in a greater extent than we can do independently. And I think that's a key to it. You know, going back to the illustration of maybe a well-oiled machine on a Friday night. Well, zoom that out a little bit, and it doesn't have to be just about one night and one shift, one rush. It can be about a whole week, a whole month, a whole year of a store running well or a company running well because the managers are working together and things are being communicated, and it's about we rather than I. I think, yeah. So the second hump that we need to get over, what's that?
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say this. So the second hump we need to get over is this when we get past this independent stage, we're moving into interdependence, and that hump really is the hump of I. It's when you realize that it's not about me. And when you realize it's not about me, and you start to turn your lamp outside of yourself and see everybody around you and work with other people, that's when you really start to see vision and start to see what you could be. You're not holding yourself down by your own lid, so to speak. So.
Yeah. I have somebody who I really value and think an awful lot of, and I saw a period of time in their life where they were very interdependent, and just recently, as I've watched them, they've become independent again. How does somebody shift back and forth in that? And why does that happen? Or do you see that happen? Because I just witnessed that. And I was like, man, you used to be so, I guess, inclusive is the word I might choose in the interdependence. But listening to them talk, all of a sudden I was hearing them be very independent.
Mm.
And I was surprised.
Yeah, I think with that, the first thing we have to try to recognize is it a trend or is it what it is? You know, I think we can all get a little selfish at times or get a little bit independent where we just want to, you know, just kind of shake loose some of the things that we feel are controlling us a little bit or whatever, and we might feel a little bit independent. So it could be that. It could be that we truly really are interdependent, but we're just maybe having a bad day, a bad week, bad month, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Or it could be the other way too. It could be that, you know, I've seen independent people kind of contain themselves and have enough self-discipline to scribble within the lines long enough to kind of make you believe that they're interdependent, and then, but they're kind of going against their nature. And then down the road, they kind of go back to being who they are. And so there is that factor at times too, I think, where people can kind of be pretenders. They're trying to be what they want you to be, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So.
Is that your smoke alarm?
It's my mother-in-law's phone. Hang on.
Okay. Best laid plans.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
So, anyway, we were talking about interdependence. Yeah.
Well, I wonder who's got some examples and some issues they're working through besides you and me, because we always have examples.
Yeah.
Bridge, are you still there with us?
I am. I'll share. I don't mind sharing at all because we're kind of in a. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
This is Bridge Bertram. And we've got a situation here in our community. We're single store owners, and we're kind of off of the beaten path. And this particular community is extremely affluent, so many of the kids that come don't have to work. Now, what's happened in this community of Lakeway is we have turned into like a retail restaurant row, and because we sit right up against the lake community and things like that, it's attracting a lot of, you know, people coming to visit and things like that. The problem is that we're seeing these kids come in when we've created an environment where we're bonusing them and we're feeding them for free, and we've got, you know, contests for perfect orders. We're doing everything we can to create some motivation. And just recently, we're now having kids come because there's so much retail going on, and they're saying, you owe me. These are 14 and 15-year-olds. You owe me a raise. And so that's been a bit of a challenge to deal with because it's kind of a Debbie Downer for me. We're not in a situation where we can pay a 14-year-old $11.50 an hour, $12.75 an hour, or anything like that. I don't think I'd feel comfortable doing it anyway. They'd have to be a superstar. So how would you handle that? You know, what could you go back to that kid and say in terms of keeping them with your team. I don't know. I could use some help there for sure.
Sure. Well, the situation might be a little bit different from person to person, of course, but I think anytime you have some type of privilege or some type of situation where people feel like you owe them, you know, you have some backwards leverage on them. And some of that might be a circumstance of, you know, just bad leverage in the company. Like you've got so many people that really, truly want their attention. They know that they can go work anyplace else and they might get more money. And so they truly do have some leverage on that and the market kind of plays towards them. But other times it's just a leadership issue, I think, when we bring people on and add them to our crew, but we maybe don't meet all of their needs that they really need, not necessarily monetary needs, but the other things. Usually monetary needs are usually not what their biggest needs are. They'll just go there because they want more money to feel appreciated. So I would start with maybe appreciation. You know, when you have kids in that situation, figure out how they are most going to be appreciated and figure out how you can meet those needs the best you can. I think one thing that younger people need that they're not equipped to tell you is they need to know exactly what's expected of them, and they need a lot of positive feedback and redirection. And they also need someone to talk through the process with them of solving problems. And I think when kids that young, or maybe not even kids, just anybody, they really are like sponges. And if we can give them those things and help them, I think that can help a lot. If they realize that they're getting something else other than money out of this experience that's helping them grow and get to another place and their needs are being met, I think that can take away some of the monetary needs. But gosh, we've all been there before. And I think sometimes there's nothing you can do about it. Sometimes people are going to just go wherever the money goes. So
yeah, no, that's true. And you don't want those people anyway. We, you know, we're, like I said, we do everything we can to incentivize. So thanks for the information.
And Bridge, one of the things that I've seen, we have 8 stores in our group, and there are those people, and some of them aren't just the 16-year-olds. We don't hire 14 and 15-year-olds, but the 16, well, we have. But, you know, there is a few that have come with that feeling of entitlement. And we sometimes will pair them with somebody who's a little bit older who just makes them realize that this is a job and you have to do it and you should be thankful you have a job. But also I would say that sometimes we've used some programs to hire some people that maybe a little bit from a definitely a different socioeconomic status, if you will, or level, who really appreciate the job. And they talk about that they appreciate the job. And they make it clear they are willing to work the hours that the entitled person won't work. And they're kind of setting, I guess, setting the example for better workers, you know, as a better worker. I don't know that that's a complete answer, but I know that I have one location where everybody appreciates the job. And if somebody comes in who feels entitled, they don't end up staying very long.
Yeah. If we had that kind of community anywhere near, that'd be the first place I'd go to recruit. But literally, these kids are, I mean, they're pulling up in Mercedes Jeeps. That's what these kids drive. It's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just an insane time of year. You know, we've had this store for 11 years, and I've never seen anything like it before. So,
right.
But I will go back to what you said, Joel, and set some more intentional expectations and positive feedback. We do have a quarterly meeting, and so that's typically where I I actually did a training once about entitlement, so maybe it's time for that again.
Yeah, this is, yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
Hey, Bridge, this is Rolf.
Hi, Rolf.
Hi, y'all. Hey, on that note, kind of one of the things that I just recently did, titles are cheap. And I've just distributed a couple of titles to some people, such as prep manager, training manager, what have you. I also have a 17-year-old kid who's been with me about just a few months. Unfortunately, he's leaving in June, end of June. But he's one of those great kids, good work ethic, you know, good parenting, all that kind of stuff. I just gave him a bump. And even though I've told everybody, keep your salary quiet, things like that, what I've found is by giving a title to somebody, boy, things just step up. You know, they step up, and then other people see that title, and then they start stepping up because they want a title, you know, whatever it may be. And I understand you can't have, you know, crew of eight different titles.
Yeah.
But something to that extent, you know, did work. And even though I tell people on the payroll side of it, you know, your wages are secret, I also... and not so naive to know that everybody's going to buy by it. So in some ways, I kind of figured, well, even though I just gave him a bump, a little bit of bump, that's going to leak out. And hopefully have other kids, you know, same age group, same kind of type of crew member, have them step up as a result. Because they saw that, oh, he got a little bit of a bump, and this is fine. Because, you know, he just starts stepping up, start answering phones, get more involved, you know, becoming a little more independent. And
that's a really good suggestion.
Yeah, giving people something to move towards and to reach out and making that an example, that's always good. The other thing I can think of, too, with this is personal challenges. You know, when you get people that kind of start getting independent and kind of working on their own and doing their own thing and just coming to work and not necessarily caring about the team so much, I think letting people know how much you need them in a certain area or to complete a certain thing, or especially when you can compliment people along the way, letting people know, hey, you are such a good pizza maker. I really need you to set the pace on Friday night. I need you to be the example for all of the other people. So as far as taking shortcuts on weighing and measuring, I need you not to do that because people look up to you. And, you know, putting people in a position where you're challenging them to rise up and kind of have an influence on other people, I think that could be very effective as well. People like to be challenged as long as they feel supported when they're being challenged and not criticized. So, you know, asking...
Yeah, Joe, I would just like to back you up 100% on that. That's a really good point. Back to that kid I was talking about. He is, you know, he's just become so good. And I've always elevated the, you know, soft cheese station and the wrap station. And the wrap station is always in charge of the grabbing cup, you know, because they have the best angle at it. And so I've been putting him there in front of other people saying, you're so good at this. I want you in charge. You're in charge of the grab and go. And that boy is Johnny on the spot. And that grab and go is always full. You know, anytime there's a you know, lull in the business, he jumps up there, and I see the other kids watching. And you're exactly right. And that's a very good point.
Yeah, you know, sometimes our younger generation gets a bad rap, and there's some reasons why that is true, but. One thing about the younger generation is they can definitely be inspired if it's something that they feel that they could be a part of that's doing something well. And unfortunately, I don't think there's enough inspirers out there to really keep them all motivated. But that's one thing we can all work on. We can work on learning to inspire people, to be a better influence on people and helping people to find their niche. And what you're talking about there is exactly the situation. That's exactly what we want to do. We want to help people just be successful where they are, and then they can expand a little bit after that. but to push and to be successful, to try to become part of a team that's going somewhere. And I think when you develop a culture like that, an interdependent culture within your team or within your company, however you look at that, you start to squeeze out some of that independence. The people that are a little bit more selfish or in it for them, they don't tend to fit in quite as well, and they either kind of get with the program, which often happens, or they move on if they can. So this interdependent culture, I think you can fester it and make it grow and make it just get better and better just by feeding into people and helping people find their spot within the team, as opposed to promoting independence. Promoting independence at that point isn't going to help a whole lot. Maybe with some of the dependent people, but that's about it.
Getting them and gearing them to help others. We, you know, if our area supervisor goes on vacation, for example, if you're a multi-unit operator, you know, even if you have two stores or one store and you were even preparing for an event day, having that independent manager call the other manager and asking them to be the lead and say, hey, you know, call over and talk to Sarah and see how Sarah's coming along in her plan. Just kind of pick her brain and make sure she's kind of doing the same things you're doing and that maybe she's got an idea for you. And, you know, getting them to, you know, not necessarily have sympathy, but have some empathy for what the other person is doing and start those conversations independent of just a complaint session. They're calling for a purpose and helping the other person out.
Right.
Yeah,
anybody else have any? Go ahead.
Oh, I just said that was a great idea. Thanks, Mickey.
Yeah. Yep.
Anybody else have any examples in the store that they'd like to discuss?
You know, one of the other things, I know this is really thinking outside of the box, but, you know, as owners sometimes, and especially if we're, if like with Bridge, if she's got one store and there's another owner, you know, and it that has a couple of stores, the next closest owner, having those kind of conversations where maybe your managers in between the two franchises are sharing thoughts and support of each other. Here in our town, we have another franchisee, and sometimes we have to borrow food from them or they'll borrow food from us. But if something is going on and I know about it, I will, you know, offer support. And I know that may sound weird, but sometimes as an owner, if you don't feel you can ever get away or you don't feel that you can, that your people have anybody else but you, sometimes getting other owners together to be part of your, like, your, you know, an extended family, I guess, like your cousins, that might help each other out also in sharing and maybe bringing all your managers together for a manager meeting if you can wing that among, you know, several different stores. Or several franchises.
I agree with that. We have a manager meeting in our Des Moines area store. So we bring, so five of our eight stores are kind of in a close enough area that we can have a manager meeting. We do this once a month where we bring all of our managers and the administration together. And we'll plan out the next month. We'll talk about you know, our marketing calendar. We'll talk about operations. We'll talk about sales and projections, all that stuff. But one of the biggest things that we do is we solve problems together. Like, I don't just dictate how things are going to go. I'll throw a problem out and I'll say, what do you guys want to do? And then we'll just start a dialogue and get people talking about it and have an interchange of ideas. And the problem gets solved by my team when we do that. Maybe it's a procedural thing or how we're going to do this or how we're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But I find that by empowering your team to do that and let them all participate in the part of the solution, you're going to get a lot more interdependence than you are if you just give them instructions and tell them what they're going to do.
Yeah. I think that's a really great idea.
Yep.
I would say, in my stores, we don't do enough manager team meetings. We, you know, we're probably 3 hours apart from our furthest store to the other furthest store. And so we don't have a lot of store meetings, but I go into the stores and speak with the store managers on a regular basis, and the area supervisors are there. So having them all together, and I'm a believer in using conference calling. If you have an iPhone or an Android, you've got conference calling at your fingertips. If you haven't used that, you can, you know, I don't know how many people you can put on. I've had 5 people on a call before on an iPhone. So, you know, you can get people on really easily, and you don't have to get them all together.
That's true. I use this video conferencing that we're on right now quite often with our managers. It helps. Yep.
Yeah. So. I think I'm going to explore this more. I think this is a great idea to do with my teams.
Yep. Yeah, I do coaching through this. It helps. So, yeah, so just to kind of summarize, really we want to try to help people move from being dependent to independent so they can solve their own problems and they can stand on their own 2 feet, and then from independence to interdependence. I think the key is that we always have our eye on interdependence with everybody, but realizing that not everyone's going to get there. Not everyone is going to mature at the same pace. Not everyone's even going to get there for lots of different reasons. But to really focus on that and be able to identify. If you can identify where they're at, you have a better idea maybe how to handle them and how to work with them. So at this point, I think I'm going to officially end our call, but we can stay on the line for anybody that has any questions or discussions or anything else. But other than that, if no one has anything else to say, thanks for joining our call.
Thanks. This was great.